funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Would sainthood and supernatural power be a blessing or a curse? For the 19-year-old folk hero at the center of Luis Alberto Urrea's new novel, the gift of healing seemed divinely given, but at the expense of her energy, her privacy, even her personal safety. Urrea first fictionalized the story of his legendary real-life ancestor Teresita Urrea in The Hummingbird's Daughter, which ends with Teresita and her father Tomas fleeing vigilantes loyal to Porfirio Diaz in Mexico for the relative safety of the U.S. His new book, Queen of America, picks up Teresita's life story where the last book leaves off, but works as a standalone novel as well. Luis Alberto Urrea joins us now to talk about the book, its historic inspiration, and the peculiar spell Teresita has cast on his own life for decades. Luis, welcome back to Think.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. So you grew up with your aunts in Tijuana telling these stories about Teresita. First of all, how are you related to her?
Teresita's dad, Tomas, was actually the first cousin of my great-grandfather, Seferino Urrea. And Tomas was orphaned near birth, very, very early in life. And so my great-great-grandfather, Don Miguel, who was the actual hacienda owner, brought him into their hacienda and raised him as a brother to Seferino. But they were actually first cousins.
So were there actual memories of these people when you were hearing these stories, or were they stories of stories, essentially?
They were stories of stories. She died in 1906. Mm-hmm. So the stuff that I first got was passed down sort of laterally across the family tree to my part of the family. And the aunts would tell me these crazy stories, but they didn't even know her name anymore. They just knew, you know, you have this Yaqui aunt, and this Yaqui aunt can heal the sick, and she can fly and all this stuff. And the legend had sort of changed into a more mythic thing where she had passed away during the conquest, they thought, and that she was sitting on a quartz crystal throne in a cave in the mountains guarded by Yaqui warriors, and that her body had never decomposed. So that's pretty heady stuff when you're a kid, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine that it would captivate your imagination. Were they passed on to you as like cautionary tales or articles of faith, or just to keep you busy on a rainy afternoon?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, my family used stories, I think, to inspire, to terrify, and to control. You know, I was just in Dallas on Friday night at the art museum talking about this stuff. And, you know, I was telling the folks about my aunts. You know, they would use tales and folk tales and just, I think, outright exaggerations to get what they wanted from us. But they also, I think, felt that they were passing on vital historical data about our family. It was very important, I think, in our family, in its sort of ruin in Tijuana, to remind us that we had high moments in the past.
Yeah, sort of a link to nobility, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There were really good things in our past.
There is a lot of humor in this book as well. Is that characteristic of the way that stories were told in your family?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I think, really characteristic of the medicine world.
Yeah.
You know, when you're with medicine people and curanderas and so forth, which I spent quite a bit of time to do the book with, you know, it's a very funny world. And I really loved the sense of sacredness being joyous and having a funky sense of humor. That really affected me and definitely got into the book.
But you're the only writer in the family, is that right?
As far as I know, yeah.
Huh.
I mean, you may appreciate this. My grandfather was a poet, allegedly, and he wrote poetry his entire life. Yet when he died, the family, for reasons I've never quite figured out, burned his entire life's work,
of
his manuscript pages. It's gone. And, you know, that may be part of the reason I write. I don't know. It haunted me so terribly all my childhood to think about this just lost forever.
Yeah, and you have to, I imagine you wonder, was he any good? Was he a hack? Was he, like, inspired?
I suspect he was a hack. I know that he was a Mason and a Rosicrucian, and perhaps they felt that he was revealing secrets. I don't know what happened, but they burned it. And the only line that remains of his entire life's work was, "Give me two wings and watch me fly." That was it.
So you were already a young adult when you realized that not only were there things in the historical record about Teresita Urrea, the real person, but they were much more recent in history than you had believed.
Yes, absolutely. I had no idea. In fact, you know, those stories you discount after a while and go off to college and all this stuff. And I had started working as a bilingual TA in the Chicano Studies Department at a community college in San Diego. And the professor I was working for knew about her when I had forgotten. And he said, you know, you're a son of the saint. And I said, what saint? He said, you know, the saint of Cabora. And I said, who? And then he said, you know, the saint. La Niña de Cabora. And I said, oh, that folklore stuff. I said, yeah, it's just a family myth. And he said, no, it's not. And he pulled out North from Mexico by Kerry McWilliams. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter about her, which was a deep shock to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so let's go back and talk about how she discovered her powers of healing, these powers that many people absolutely believe she had. She had sort of a near-death experience.
Yeah, she did. She always had, you know, in some strange way was touched by God. You know, some people just are, and they're God mad from the beginning. And she was very passionate, but she was also coming at it, one must understand, from an indigenous perspective. And the Yaqui tribes especially had a syncretistic religion in which they had blended Catholicism with indigenous medicine ways. It was very interesting. So when she was coming up, she very much wanted to be an herbalist and a midwife, and she began studying that, and she's studying all these techniques. And even before the near-death experience, she had begun to show evidence of somehow being able to remove physical pain from people, from women specifically during childbirth.
Did you feel, I mean, obviously there is truth to the medicine, at least some of the medicine practiced by curanderas. There are herbs that can heal people and make people feel better. It's possible her gifts were part working knowledge of natural remedies, part placebo. Did you feel, Luis, like you had to decide conclusively for yourself whether that counts as miracles?
When you spend 10 years with shamans, miracle is not part of the equation any longer.
Really?
Yeah. One of the teachers said to me, you know, supernatural doesn't mean occult. It means extra natural, extremely natural, which I thought was really fascinating. So, you know, miracles, it's such a fraught term. You know, you might find this interesting, but when we were editing the book, the first book, they were cutting out a lot of this miraculous stuff because their position in New York was, well, this is a historical novel, you know. We got to take some of this magical realism out. And I said, I hate to tell you this, but the magical realism is the actual recorded history.
Yeah.
That's all from eyewitness accounts. And, the usual fictive stuff, like what did they eat for breakfast, that's the fantasy. I made that up because no one knows.
What do you think she believed about her gifts? You talk about, you know, her relationship to faith and to her sense that she had a sort of special destiny. And yet, even in the book, there are cases in which she is aware she will not be able to do much to help the people who come to her.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, it was a very real experience to her. Very real. And there are a lot of interesting stories about things that happened around her and things that she did. You know, I talk in the book about how she would make herself too heavy to move, which is actually, if you have martial artists listening, they know immediately what I'm talking about, because Tai Chi masters can do this. They can make themselves too physically heavy to be moved. Interestingly enough, we were just this weekend in Phoenix, Arizona, and Teresita's granddaughters came. They often join me, and they first thing they said was, you know, she would make herself too heavy to be moved. It's a big deal in the family, actual memories of her. So I think it was real to her. It was part of her life. I don't think she had in any way prepared for the catastrophe of holiness, what happens when you're an alleged saint. She didn't like being called saint to begin with. She thought it was embarrassing and inappropriate. She just felt that she really had seen God, and God had really given her this gift. And there was the inescapable fact that according to all the testimonies, her body really did smell like roses after the near-death experience. So she had this really strange kind of Catholic symbol of sanctification that dogged her whole life. It embarrassed her. You know, I try to point out to people she was very young. She died at 33, mm-hmm. so much of this story is somebody in her teens and 20s. And, you know, no young woman, I don't think, would be happy to be reeking of body odor all the time, even if it were roses. To her, it was sweat.
My guest is journalist, novelist, and poet Luis Alberto Urrea. His new book is called Queen of America. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. Right now, we want to remind you that we are in the midst of the winter membership campaign here at KERA. We invite you to join the team of people that make KERA possible by calling in now to 1-888-694-6931 or going online to kera.org. We have a goal for this first hour of Think to raise $3,034. Hello, Jeff Whittington.
Hello, Chris. We do. Our goal is $3,034. You can help us reach that goal by calling 888-694-6931 or by contributing. Just click and join at kera.org. Chris, this goal is not an arbitrary goal. This is designed to keep us on track for our ultimate goal, which is to raise all the money in half the time.
We have had surprisingly few complaints about shortening the length of our fundraising drive. We love the idea as much as you do, perhaps even more. It can only continue this way if we raise the money necessary for this fundraising campaign. You can help us out now and also receive as a thank you gift a copy of Queen of America. Fascinating new book. It's the follow-up to The Hummingbird's Daughter, which was extremely influential several years ago when it was published. Still being talked about, still a favorite novel of many people. Even if you haven't read that book, this one will make sense to you and I hope captivate you as much as it captivated me. Those are available as a thank you when you make a contribution at or above $120 for this year.
The number to call, 888-694-6931. You can make your $120 contribution as a sustaining member. That's just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member. It's a great way to support KERA, and it's a great way to to get yourself your very own copy of Luis Alberto Urrea's book. You know, Luis was in town last week. Mm-hmm. He spoke here in town at the Dallas Museum of Art event, and also I think in association with the World Affairs Council. And those are groups that we talk to their speakers a lot. We could not get him when he was here, but we have him today, and we're so thrilled that he's taking time. And he's being patient with us during these membership breaks as well. It's really a great honor to be able to bring you the guests that we bring you every single day on the Think Show. If you appreciate that, then please call right now, 888-694-6931, or contribute at kera.org.
Maybe you have listened to this station in the past, heard the fundraising drives, never made a contribution and thought, who are those people who give money when we ask? It's people exactly like you. And quite frankly, everybody who is a current sustaining or supporting member of the station was once like you and hadn't yet made that first contribution. We invite you to join this list of really wonderful people who keep the station strong, who believe enough in public radio, not simply to take from public radio, but also to give back to public radio, to provide this service to the entire North Texas community.
Hey, last year, it took us 24 days to raise the dollars necessary for the winter membership campaign. And I joked, but it's no joke. It took Egypt fewer days to overthrow its
surely
its
with democracy on our side, we can move faster.
I think they did it in 15 or 17 days. It took KERA 24 days to reach the goal. And so what we decided this time, our goal, reach it in half the time. 12 days and a little change. That change was a Friday morning, a few mm-hmm. hours Friday morning. Chris, we made great progress thanks to so many folks, but we're still waiting to hear from you, especially in support of Think. $3,034 left to raise in the first hour of Think today. So just about 40 minutes left to go. Please be the next one. Please click and join online at kera.org or call
1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist, novelist, and poet Luis Alberto Rea. His new book is called Queen of America. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I have to say, Luis, for me, one of the most interesting elements of the story is the juxtaposition of these remarkable powers that Teresita had, the amazing devotion that they inspired among people who believed that they could be healed by her, and then the natural desire of the 19-year-old girl she is at the beginning of the novel to just lead a normal life. And it made me think about the stories I've read of anybody throughout history who has been considered holy and the fact that they were also human.
Yeah, I think that's a real issue. And it's been interesting to watch the critical response to the book, which has been great. And I'm really, you know, moved by all that. But sometimes people say, well, you know, I wish the story had turned out this way or that way. And I think, well, we're kind of stuck with how the story did turn out. It's historical fiction. But, you know, I think that's a really strong element of all of this, that this was a person who had this thing visited upon her. It's almost a, you know, be careful what you wish for situation, mm-hmm. right? Where this huge thing was much larger than anything she expected. And when she came here, if you can imagine this, I think of it almost as a science fiction story in that she got on a magical train, the Polar Express, and it took her from Mexico into the future in one leap. And it's sort of an Arthur C. Clarke story in a way. I think she, you know, she gets to a world where everything is magic. Everything. Mm. There's electric light. There's a gas lamps. There's ice cream. There are cars.
Flush toilets.
Flush toilets, yeah. And that's overwhelming. I also joke with the audiences I talk to that in some ways this is my Lady Gaga book. You know? that she came here and became a pop sensation. Mm. And I don't think she was ready for that either. And I think you put all that together with, yeah, just the natural wish for normal things that someone that age goes through. And, you know, it's been enlightening to raise two daughters while working on this book. And I really thought about our middle daughter who's in college now. In fact, I'm at Neuqua Valley High right now with a writing class. All writing while I'm talking on the phone. It's great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's their first experience of the writer's media life. But, you know, but I think about what it's like to try to negotiate being a young person. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. And to have this incredible thing happen to her and all this attention. And I think certainly when she got to the United States, I think part of her desire was to start closing it down. It was way too much for her already, and it just took off in a different direction when she got here. So she was, I think, trying to negotiate all those energies.
Well, you know, as the mother of an almost 13-year-old daughter, it also occurred to me that this is very much an adolescence story, as she, especially in the first part of the book, breaks from this father who has sacrificed literally everything to protect her, and yet, you know, they're bickering all the time.
Well, I think I was feeling sorry for myself. You know, I always say this to people, if there are any dads out there who've raised teens, then you know exactly what happens. You know, there's a certain moment when you were Paul Bunyan, and then the next day you're this slightly embarrassing, unhip guy that causes a lot of, you know, blushing and sorrow in your daughter. It's just, I think, part of the process. And she, all of a sudden, there's that moment when she says to herself, well, when did he start picking his teeth with a piece of paper? What the heck, you know? Why is he always falling asleep and then jerking awake and acting like he wasn't asleep and saying something as though we're in a conversation? That's embarrassing. So, you know, she starts to go through all of those things, but she can't separate from him because she can't survive without his help yet, you know? And so I think that the pressures are rising, and he's feeling all of those weird immigrant pressures that I watched my dad have. You know, you come to the United States and you can't find your footing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this weird ambivalence between wanting in some ways to embrace this new place you've come to for refuge, for greater opportunity, and realizing you don't have anything like the sort of status you had, even in compromised circumstances in your homeland.
Exactly. But he was fascinating to me because he was such a huge personality, mm-hmm. as I understand him, that I think his secret weapon was himself. And he had he was a classic guy to come to the United States at the birth of the industrial era, because he just figured, you know, anything goes here, and I'm going to find that way. And he did pretty well by himself after all, once he found his bearings. But, you know, I think it's a classic immigrant story, no matter what the immigrant group is, it comes here. And there's that moment when she goes to New York finally, and she rolls in from the West on a train, and she is aware that she's coming into New York by the wrong door, that all the others are coming in from the East, and she's sneaking in from the back door, but she's still coming into New York.
What is your sense of what Tomas believed about his daughter's gifts?
He didn't buy it, but I think he was really baffled by it and constantly confronted with evidence of it. He was a rational guy. He was not a churchgoer. There's a scene in the first novel where a group of journalists had been sent by the Mexican government to debunk her. That was a true story. And one of those gentlemen was bald. And it's in the record, carefully edited to get all obscenities out. But they said to him, "We're trying to find the saint." And he burst. "There's no blank, blank, blank saint on this blank, blank, blank ranch, you know, and the day my daughter is a blank, blank, blank saint is the day she grows hair on your head." And he went storming off. And, you know, the story turned out that after they spent a couple of days with her, the bald man had peach fuzz all over his head. And there's this hilarious outcome to it where he went and found Tomas, and he didn't say a word. He just bent over and put his head in his face and rubbed the peach fuzz. And it caused, unfortunately, it was a bit of a nail in their coffin, because instead of then going back to Mexico City to prove she was a joke, they went back converted, and it ratcheted up Diaz's panic.
Yeah, talk about why Teresita became such a threat to the Diaz administration.
Well, my personal belief is that the boys that run everything know in their hearts that women should be running the border because men have screwed it up nonstop all through history. I think that's part of what happened. But also, you know, at the time that she surged, there was a pretty vicious indigenous cleansing happening. And her people, the Yaqui people, the Mayo people, they were actually undergoing a targeted genocide at the time. And they were, you know, their lands were being stripped by Diaz and given to foreign investors, and they were being shipped by cattle car to Yucatan to death camps. And you can find the records of some of the hacienda owners down there. They had figured out that it would take 6 weeks of hard labor to kill a Yaqui man. Just horrifying.
You know, it is interesting when you talk about the power of women. I think many people who are not very familiar with Mexican culture think of this, you know, almost a caricature of a very macho-led society. And yet, you know, that the most powerful figure in religion for a lot of people, at least within the Catholic Church, is La Virgen.
Absolutely true. And, you know, now that the delightful narcos have taken over, I mean, you know, their most powerful deity is Saint Death, Santa Muerte, who seems to be female. So, you know, it's very interesting. I think there's a lot of matriarchal power in Mexico that is disguised. I jokingly say in my books that, you know, the old women in Mexico know where the power lies, but they allow the men to strut around like roosters and act all important. And then when the men leave home, then they put everything to right and keep running the world, which was my experience. I don't know if it's true, but that's what I saw.
So Teresita never wanted to make any money for healing people. And this was to the great chagrin of not only her father, but other people who said it's okay to take a little from these people.
Yeah, I think our whole family would have really loved it if she had. Yeah, but part of this was, again, due to the vision. When she had the near-death experience, she told later she was unwilling to talk about what happened. But later on, she let slip that she had gone and met God. She had actually met God, and she said, "The beautiful woman with God." So everybody assumed this was Mary or Guadalupe. Nobody knows. But they met, and it was in a beautiful place, and she saw deer and waterfalls, heaven, I guess. And he told her, "You cannot stay." She wanted to stay. You must go back. "I have a gift for you to take to my children, and you may never profit from it. I will give you this gift to take to my children, but it's not for you to profit from. It's for you to serve." And so she apparently, according to her, reluctantly returned and did not know what this gift would be, and it started asserting itself right away. So she felt, right or wrong, because there's a lot of, you know, it's ambivalent. It's ambiguous. One could I tried to leave it open for you to decide for yourself what you think. But she believed that she had promised God not to profit. And being a teenager and not wise in the ways of the world and fairly naive when she separated from her family and went into the greater United States, she certainly wasn't ready to meet some sly venture capitalist who said, hey, I tell you what, man, we'll make a contract where we promise you'll never earn any money.
Yeah, we'll take care of all that. Yeah,
yeah, don't worry about it. Well, you won't make any money, but you'll get to do your work and we'll feed you. Mm-hmm. And she signed this contract and, you know, sold herself to the company store, and she didn't know she was doing it.
Yeah, and there are times when she makes some choices here, Luis, that you just have to cringe at knowing that she's going to do what she's going to do.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's part of what makes literature and the arts, film, theater so interesting. There's a certain narrative that we all, I think, respond to, in which sometimes the reader is a few steps ahead of the viewpoint character, and it's what adds poignancy, I think, to the story. Certainly anybody who's been through adolescence can look back and wishes they could give her some advice, you know. When I started working on it, I had a very overwhelming sense of duty to my great aunt, and then I was suddenly her age, and so she felt like a sister, and then all of a sudden she felt like a kid sister and now feels like my daughter because I'm so much older than she was when she died. And those things change your perspective, I think, as you write. And I wish there were ways I could go back and warn her, look, this is not going to work out for you because of this and this and this. But she was making the best choices she could as she negotiated the life.
My guest is Luis Alberto Rea, journalist, novelist, and poet. His latest novel is called Queen of America. It is available now in bookstores and online. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-933-5372. We want to remind you, as we take a quick break here, that we are in the midst of our winter membership campaign. We started the hour with a goal for this first hour of Think of raising $3,034. We have $1,616 left to raise. Thank you so much for having made a contribution if you were one of the donors during that time. I'm joined now once again by Jeff Whittington. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We're making some great progress here. $1,616 left to raise in this hour. The number to call, 888-694-6931. Click and join online safely and securely at KERA.org. Pick up your very own copy of Luis Alberto Urrea's book, Queen of America. You may have heard him on some of the weekend programs on NPR. It's been very well reviewed. We're really excited that he's able to join us on the phone today for the show. And so if you appreciate that and you want your very own copy of the book, then you can pick that up when you join the station with a contribution of just $10 a month as a sustaining member, or $120 all at once.
Thank you so much to Jenny and Chris Bosworth in North Richland Hills, Teresa and Daniel Luby in Arlington, Marcel Borgers in Fort Worth. They have all gone online to KERA.org or called in to 1-888-694-6931 and made their contribution.
Thanks also to Aaron and Hank Stafford in Dallas, Amy and Chris Murphy, who joined in Saxe. Thank you so much also to Mark and Lynn Freeman in Dallas. We're hearing from all over the North Texas area, and we really, really appreciate the fact that you're supporting the station, you're supporting Think, and you're helping us reach our goal of raising all the money necessary in half the time. Last year in January, the membership campaign, Chris, it took 24 days. Whew, that was a long membership campaign. Many of you came through. And, you know, we also heard from many of you that you really want these drives to be shorter. And so we've looked at the way we talk about them, and we've looked at kind of what our goals are, and we're making great progress. We're on track to finish this drive in much less time than last year, 12 days. We've got to stay on track, and stay on track means if you haven't made your contribution yet, this is a great opportunity to do it right now.
It all depends on you and your quick action here. It looks like we're making very good progress. We have $1,492 left to raise in this hour. That gives us about 22 minutes and a few seconds. You can join the list of people making it happen at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931. Again, we do have copies as a thank you gift at the $120 contribution level or above. Queen of America is one of those books that is now, it's been reviewed everywhere. It's making a lot of book club lists. Maybe you want to read it and then recommend it to a friend. If you are also in a position to support KERA, you can do both at one time and pick up a fantastic book for yourself.
888-694-6931. Online, click and join at kera.org. It's fast and easy, safe and secure, and very convenient for you to join online. Maybe you're streaming KERA right now. Maybe you're listening online, just a few clicks away from supporting the station. And think about what you get. You get less fundraising when we reach the goal of raising all the money necessary in half the time. In half the time compared to last year. That's just a 12-day membership campaign. You get 12 days back of an uninterrupted Think Show, an uninterrupted Fresh Air with Terry Gross, or an uninterrupted Diane Rehm Show, uninterrupted Morning Edition. That's what you get back. You get back that quality time with your public radio service, time that you cherish and time that you really like to spend with KERA, your public radio station. So that's why we're asking you to go ahead and make your contribution right now. Just $1,492 left to raise in this first hour of Think Today. We can get there with your call, with your online contribution right now.
You are public radio. I mean, we do this for you, and we do it by your support, with your support. Those of you who become supporting members of the station are truly part of the team. Your money pays for programming. It pays for staff salaries. It pays for keeping the transmitter running, all the little expenses and big expenses that we have in order to create this service and sustain it in North Texas. Your contribution now at 1-888-694-6931 is really important to us, whether that is a friends-level contribution at $1,500 or above, or whether you want to do $5 or $10 a month. It all makes a difference here.
Yeah, it's time for you to renew your friends membership at the $1,500 annual contribution, which works out to just $125 a month when you become a sustaining friend of the station. You could help us meet our goal by renewing your membership as a friend or joining for the first time with a $1,500 contribution right now. We'd make the goal for the first hour of Think. We could go ahead and start working on the next hour's goal for Think and stay on track to raising all the money in half the time.
You can do your part now by going online to kera.org. You can also check out thank you gifts there, including copies of Queen of America by Luis Alberto Urrea. There are also other thank you gifts you can choose. You can also give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. Take care of your membership that way. We'll be back in about 2 minutes with Luis Alberto Urrea, and thanks.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist, novelist, and poet Luis Alberto Urrea. His new book is called Queen of America. It's a continuation of the story of Teresita Urrea begun in The Hummingbird's Daughter, but this is a standalone novel as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Luis, I know that before you actually wrote The Hummingbird's Daughter, the novel that tells the story of Teresita's early life, you considered a nonfiction treatment for this story. Why did you ultimately choose fiction instead?
You know, this is going to sound unbearably arty, but it's true. I realized at a certain point that you can't footnote a dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, so much of the work that the medicine people were doing was dream-related and inference related and even visions, and that was an element. And I grew up in a household that worshiped Mishner, right? I thought, you know, the best thing I could ever do is write a really long novel that should start probably in the Jurassic and explain the volcano that created the mountain where the people live. So I didn't go quite that far, but I just wanted to do, I felt that fiction, especially long-form fiction, is the one piece of art that can really put you in a waking dream. That's what I hope. You know, it's a trance. It's a spell one goes into. And I wanted to give her the best I had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the time, it seemed like an impossible task. I didn't think I could do it, but I thought I would just try in honor of her to give her absolutely best I had in me. So all those things went into it. And I would just say that, you know, I think that, that the nonfiction work is often a study of the public life and the public record. But I think, oh, that's the class bell ringing. Sorry. But I also think that fiction is the way to then deal with the hidden private life as well. And so those factors were all part of it.
Are there times, on the one hand, that would seem very liberating because you you seem to have carved out for yourself exactly where you would use fiction and where you would stick specifically with the fact? But I wonder if there were times when it was extra challenging because you didn't want to deviate from what actually happened.
Oh, yeah. It was extra challenging for all 26 years. yeah. And there was one place where I finally gave in to some Hollywood-style sleight of hand in Queen of America, and that is the passage in Los Angeles mm-hmm. is true, and she really was burned out by union busters and all that. But it happened even later, after New York, actually. I talk about this in the notes. I just realized that as a work of fiction, it would exhaust, I think, the readers and would make it sort of a rattling contraption. So I actually, just for questions of creating a dramatic narrative, moved it ahead a little bit. But everything in it is a historical record. That's the only time I fudged the timeline. But I fessed up to it in the notes. So.
There are lots of interesting, I imagine that they are real clips from contemporary newspaper accounts.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They're all, yeah, direct quotes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to think of how she was covered and that this sort of thing made the newspapers.
It made the newspapers all over the place. You know, it was a sensation. My wife is a journalist, and I don't know that she necessarily was buying it until we found the New York Times, the LA Times, and the Texas newspapers, you know, and that's fascinating. By the way, speaking of Texas, a whole passage of the book is in Texas, in El Paso, and I tried every which way to get her to Austin and Dallas. I just couldn't, but I would have if I could have.
I'm from El Paso, so I was happy
are?
To read those sections.
I
yes.
love El Paso. I go there as much as possible.
Yeah, I was almost able to picture the sort of house, at least, in which she would have been living, because some like that are still standing there.
Yeah, they are there. The rooming house she ended up in is still there. It's on Oregon Street, right in Segundo Barrio, and it's now been a Teresita Museum since the first book came out, which makes me very happy.
So talk about this. Today, at least in the U.S., people with Native American roots tend to be very proud of them. This was not the case in Teresita's day, particularly in Mexico. Why were the Yaqui and other indigenous tribes at such a disadvantage?
I've tried to figure this out myself. I don't quite understand. Mexico has got a funny obsession, which is almost, I think it's our own indigenous obsession on steroids. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of my earliest teachers and sort of sounding boards was Vine Deloria Jr., you know, the great Lakota theologian and thinker. And he used to say to me, isn't it funny that every American you meet all had a Cherokee grandmother?
Yeah.
You know, he said, there are more Cherokee grandmothers than there were Cherokee people. Mm-hmm. And they were all princesses, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting too. Well, Mexico's got a version of that, but it's all back to the glory days, the Aztecs and the Mayas. That's fantastic. But the indigenous people, even to this day, in the present day, are just not respected. I mean, I write about this a lot in my nonfiction, certainly is a real element of Devil's Highway, but even the earlier books, that the indigenous people in Mexico are suffering mightily. You know, right now there's this terrible drought and proto-famine going on in the Tarahumara lands in the Sierra that people don't even know about. So I think that's all an element. I think it's an element of conquest, perhaps, that certainly in the societal levels that Tomas ran in, it was much more important to hew to your European roots. People wanted to be more sophisticated and have sophisticated tastes, and they looked down on folkloric tastes, which I find to this day. I mean, the moneyed parts of my family are wonderful, brilliant, charming people, but they also kind of think it's really funny that I like folkloric stuff. You know, I like painted pottery. Oh, please. They want, you know, they want some kind of crazy George Jetson modern lamp on steel poles. But I like a painted clay skull myself. Mm-hmm. That's my taste.
To what extent does your love of poetry find its way into your prose?
Totally. Mm-hmm. I would say I have said before in interviews that I think Hummingbird's Daughter and Queen of America were my cheap way of trying to sneak about 30,000 haiku per book on reader.
There really is some beautiful, beautiful language.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I love poetry. I love song. And, you know, so that's always my touchstone. Whenever I'm feeling the urge to write, I find myself consuming poetry, piles of poetry books. I think that gets the reactor going for me.
And you actually read the audiobooks yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. You know, when it was time to do Hummingbird, I just felt that I couldn't trust her to anyone else. And then when Queen came along, you know, it was back into the saddle again. So,
Do you write thinking about that you will read these aloud at some point?
No. In fact, I should read them aloud because once you're doing the audiobook, you think, oh, my God, I can't believe I wrote something as bad as this. You know, once you hear it out in the air, you think that is as awkward as it could possibly be. It sounded okay inside your head, but out in the air, it sounds a little different.
Yeah, I would think it was interesting because the book is completely finished. You cannot deviate from the printed text,
no,
but there must be little tiny things that you think, oh, I'd like to add an and there or remove a but or something.
Oh, yes. You know, I found, much to my chagrin, I don't know why, but I had this almost hypnotized obsession with the words furling and unfurling. And, you know, I was at a certain point humiliated to realize that every third page something was furling or unfurling. So I spent much of my time hacking that word out constantly through the thing. And whenever I found it when I was doing the audio, I didn't want to say it because I remembered that I had gotten rid of about 67 of them. I don't know what happened. You just get on these jags, you know, and sometimes you don't catch them until you hear them. And all that being said, I have to tell you that, you know, if you want to hear something really curious, the audiobook of Queen of America is the only place on tape anyone will ever hear me giving birth to a child. So those birth scenes were quite interesting.
So, Louise, after 26 years, and really maybe decades before that, that these seeds were planted, is it a relief to be done with Teresita?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love her, but it was time for her to move on. Mm-hmm. You know, you spent so much time, and the responsibility is so great. You know, there's family there. You in Austin and in San Antonio have got the great-grandchildren of Tomas and Gabriela. They live there. And in Phoenix, Teresita's actual granddaughters came to my reading. And they brought all these cousins I hadn't met yet. So I'm always terrified that the family's going to chew me out and say, and they've been fantastic about it, very understanding and accepting. But that responsibility was huge. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've done my entire adult life working on this, and my other writing career has been a distraction from this. And now I graduated, and I can do whatever I want. I'm not sure what I want, but I can go anywhere.
Well, we can't wait for the next project that you take on. We'd love
to
have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The new novel by Luis Alberto Rea is called Queen of America. It's out now in bookstores and online. And, of course, you can receive a copy as a thank you gift when you join the station this afternoon. The telephone number to do that is 1-888-694-6931. If it's possible, even faster and easier is to go online and make your contribution at kera.org. So we started Think This Hour. We needed to raise $3,034 in order to be on track to end this drive in half the time that we did last year. Last time we checked in, we had about $1,500 left to raise. At this point, Jeff Whittington, you have an update for us?
Yeah, I was told just before I came in, Chris, that there's just $100 left to raise.
Oh,
in
fantastic.
The goal for this hour of Think. So as I said in the last membership break, we can start working on the next hour's goal, which is $2,200 in the next hour. So we can say, you know, we have $2,300 left to raise during Think today. And we have about an hour and 5 or 6 minutes to do it. So this keeps us on track. This keeps the membership campaign on track. This keeps your membership campaign, your station's membership campaign on track to give you back 12 days of fundraising-free programming compared to last year. It took 24 days to raise the necessary funds to keep KERA fiscally strong last winter. We're cutting it. We're going to cut that in half this time with your help and do 12 days, all the money in half the time, 888-694-6931, or click and join at kera.org.
Please send the message to the station, and particularly to the folks who run fundraising around here, that you want us to do it this way, by making your call quickly. If you know you will eventually call in, please do it now. And please don't assume, by the way, with $100 left to raise in the next 5 minutes, that someone else will call in, because you know, those are sort of famous stories of everybody listening assuming that somebody else has got your back, and then we don't always make the goal. So we do need to raise an additional $100 this hour. Perhaps you can swoop in and be the hero for the hour by going online to kera.org or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
We tell you during these membership campaigns that we, you know, this is part of the deal. This is the necessary thing. This is the chore, if you will, just like you had chores when you were a kid, and just like we all have responsibilities personally and professionally now. Well, this is kind of the way it's done at public radio. It's the way it's done at KERA. We still have our regular full-time jobs to do as well. So for us, it's also really important that we raise the necessary funds as quickly as possible so that we can continue to bring you the programs, the guests, the interviews, the news stories, and the service that you've come to depend on from KERA. That's what it's all about. You know, we're producing the show, and Chris is doing the interview, and we're interrupting it for these membership breaks because it's absolutely necessary. But the sooner we can wrap up the drive, and if we can do it in half the time, of course, 12 days is still too long, but who knows where that will lead us for membership campaigns down the road.
It'd be amazing to get to like a 6-day drive or a 3-day drive. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Mm-hmm. Your contribution makes it possible, and make it now. Instead of waiting to the end of the 12 days, do it now. Get us to our goal. You're not getting us to our goal so much as this is your goal too. You love KERA. You listen to KERA. You want the station to be here. We know that. We know that. And so our goal is also your goal, and you can contribute to this by going online now to kera.org or by calling in to 1-888-694-6931. Make it happen for the station and make it happen for you.
All kinds of ways for you to decide to be thanked. If you want to be thanked for your contribution, just go to kera.org and you can see the available. There's like the KERA Smart Pack. There's the KERA Green Pack with some an extra number of shopping bags that you can use, your reusable shopping bags. You can check out the details of that at kera.org. This hour, we're offering you your very own copy of Luis Alberto Urrea's new novel, Queen of America. It's been, as Chris said, picked up by a lot of book clubs, and it's been really popular. We were really thrilled to get him on the show today. He was in Dallas last week for a speaking engagement, and we were able to get him on the show today to talk about the book for you. And that's what all this is about, really. It's all about you. And during the membership campaign, it's all about your opportunity to support the station and help make possible the service that you use. So please take a moment right now. Call 1-888-694-6931. Or go online, click and join, kera.org.
Thank you so much, Hallie Workman in Flower Mound, for your contribution. Thank you, Andrew Hightower in Austin. Thank you, Ken Kuhn Market in Irving. Thank you, Spencer and Cheryl McIntosh in Keller, and Bennett Marmaduke in Carrollton. Also, Paul Stendebach in Plano. Really appreciate your contributions this hour.
We have achieved the first hour goal, so thanks so much to each of you who contributed. Our goal was $3,034 in the first hour, I think. That's the goal that we needed to achieve to stay on track. So right now, you know, we're staying on track with raising all the money in half the time. That's a 12-day membership campaign instead of the 24-day slog that we went through last winter. And, you know, we still made it, but we don't ever want to do that kind of a lengthy membership campaign again. Your participation right now will help ensure that that doesn't happen ever again. And that's why it's so crucial that we hear from you at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. For the second hour, I think, Chris, we do have a goal.
$2,200 to raise in the second hour. You and your contribution will get us there. That's really not that many contributions if you think about it. If you're ready to make $120 or a $240 contribution, a $240 contribution takes us 10% of the way there. It's the perfect time to do it. If we had one Friends member right now renewing or establishing a Friends level membership, that would be leave us with just a couple of $100. Make your contribution now. Please make your voice heard in terms of, do you want a long long slog, as Jeff has said, or do you want a short drive that goes by as quickly as possible while ensuring that this station is fiscally healthy and able to bring you everything that you want to hear?
Yeah, the choice is yours. If you like really long, 3-week-long membership campaigns, then don't call. But if you want the drive to end as soon as possible, call now, 888-694-6931. And thanks for your contribution when you click and join at KERA.org.
Maybe even make an additional gift. An additional gift also sends the message that you like the short drive, not the long slog. Again, KERA.org or 888-694-6931.